Ed Adams, and this is the Weekly Genealogy Toolkit, the podcast that helps the new genealogist get the most out of their research time and avoid the most common pitfalls. Growing up, we all heard of the kid who had a class with a student named Lamangelo or Orangelo or something else equally absurd. In the internet age, there's a subreddit for just about everything, and yes, there's even a subreddit for people who happen upon others who have unusual names. I suspect that the vast majority of these names are apocryphal urban legends passed on from year to year out of a sense of tradition or something like that, but I have met a few people in my day with truly unique names. As genealogists, we spend so much of our time looking for names, but how much time do we actually spend thinking about names? Think about your own name. How did you get it? Were you named after your great-grandmother or after the city where your parents first met? Or perhaps you were named after your mom's favorite band. No matter how you got your name, it probably wasn't random. I mean, I suppose there are some circumstances out there where people might have gotten a name without a tremendous amount of forethought, but those are truly unusual situations. For most people, their name means something. Your parents thought for a long time about what to name you. They developed a list of a few names for either gender, and then they ultimately settled on one to the exclusion of all the others. Think also about the wide variety of names that you encounter from day to day and what you can assume about that person's background based on their name. There are a number of implications to this, and it's one of the reasons that some colleges have moved to anonymizing applications to remove the potential for any bias, precisely because we can extrapolate so much simply based on a name. You can use the names in your family to help you find the next generation back. How? Well, for the same reason that you can assume ethnicity, nationality, and sometimes even political leanings based on the names you encounter today. People groups tend to follow relatively predictable naming patterns that sometimes evolve slowly and sometimes rapidly, but broadly speaking, they evolve fairly uniformly across the people group. I would really like to be able to give you some widely applicable guidelines, like middle names are usually the surname of the mother, but while that's true of some people groups, it's not true of others. So you need to spend some time learning the naming conventions applicable to the people group that you're researching. Some groups, like the Scots-Irish, had a fairly set and predictable naming patterns that weren't followed 100% of the time, but were followed enough to make them a really good research tool. Other groups evolved their naming schemes rapidly over a short period of time, moving with popular regional or national trends, so their names may not tell you quite as much. So let's start with the Scots-Irish and get a sense of what understanding what's in a name can do for you. When dealing with American Scots-Irish from, say, 1740 to about 1870, you see a very predictable pattern by which they named their children. Before 1740, there weren't enough Scots-Irish in the colonies to think of them as a distinct people group, and after 1870, they had largely ceased to be a distinct people group except for in a few isolated areas, and they largely evolved into following regional or national trends. During this time period, though, you often see them using the following pattern. The first son is named after the paternal grandfather. The first daughter is named after the maternal grandmother. The second son is named after the maternal grandfather. And the second daughter is named after the paternal grandmother. The third son is named for the father. And the third daughter is named for the mother. Now, as a cautionary note, I have rarely seen it when this pattern is followed fully. By the time you get to the fourth or fifth kid, I think they sometimes just gave names that they liked. But the earlier the kid is in the birth order, the more likely it is that their name followed this convention. So let's say you're looking at a family in the backcountry of South Carolina whose surname is Boyd. The backcountry of South Carolina was thick with Scots-Irish, and Boyd is a good Gaelic surname. You've traced the family back to Samuel Boyd, but can't find anything to link him to his parents. And there are a number of male Boyds of the right age to be his father. You find Samuel's will and see the list of his children, or at least his surviving children by the time he's filling out a will. He's got three sons named William, Robert, and Samuel. You trace each of those sons through the census years to confirm their birth order, and it looks like William is the oldest and Samuel is the youngest. Well, since you can confirm that Samuel, the youngest son, was named after his father, which matches the naming convention, then you can look to see if any of the Boyd men who are of the right age to be the elder Samuel's father might be named William. If so, this is the first person I'd do serious research into. It's not a sure thing, and I wouldn't just mark down in my family tree that William is the father, but it's a great guide for your research. Most Americans didn't start giving their children middle names until after 1800. There were certainly Americans with middle names well before this, but it just wasn't common, and it certainly wasn't common among the lower classes. Now, by the time you get to the Civil War, it would have been fairly unusual to find an American of Scots-Irish descent that didn't have a middle name. You will very often find shared family trees that show people of average socioeconomic status who were born in the mid-18th century as having a middle name. I'd say that 99% of the time, that's complete and utter bunk. Ignore it, and unless you can find a source for the name, I'd assume that someone gave that middle name to the person 100 years or so after their death. The Scots-Irish had a far less stringent naming convention for middle names than they did for first names. The most common thing I have seen is a fairly common convention of giving children middle names that are surnames from the wider family, starting with the mother's maiden name. Place-based middle names are pretty common, and by the time you get to the 1820s, I've seen an awful lot of politically inspired middle names that link with the first name. So don't be surprised if you see a George Washington Boyd somewhere in the family we discussed above. Naming conventions can give you great clues for more recent immigrant ancestors as well. The Polish, for example, most commonly named their children after a saint associated with the Catholic feast day closest to the birth of their child. So right away, if you don't have birth information for your ancestor, but they were Polish and named Stanisław, then you have a clue that he may have been born in mid-April, although it's just a clue and far from proof. Another interesting thing to take into consideration when dealing with Polish relatives is that it's possible that their reported birth date on immigration documents may actually be their namesake's feast day or their baptismal day, because it was not tradition to celebrate birthdays in Poland and was more common to celebrate the feast day. For more information about Polish naming conventions, I'd encourage you to look at a copy of Polish Roots by Rosemary A. Korzempa. It's a great resource for genealogy in Poland at large, but near the back of the book, she's got a good section on Polish naming habits. Ukrainian naming conventions are similar to Polish, except that the Ukrainians more likely used the Byzantine calendar for determining feast days rather than the Roman calendar. If your Polish or Ukrainian ancestor had a distinctly Old Testament name like Jacob, David, Ezra, Mordecai, or their Slavic counterparts, then there's a strong chance that they were Jewish, as it's very unusual to see Catholics from anywhere named after a prominent Old Testament figure. When dealing with colonial American names, if you're looking into someone named Moses or Shadrach, then I'd bet a paycheck that they aren't either Catholic or Anglican. More specifically, at that time, I'd guess Baptist or Methodist. This can help you determine what people group to associate that person with to help better target your research. Because remember, as much as we like to think of ourselves as individuals, and we are individuals who are heavily influenced by their context. So I've offered a few examples of naming conventions, but what about Mexican naming conventions, or Lithuanian, or French? I can't possibly go through them all because there's not enough time and I only know what I know. But thankfully, this is something that you can pretty easily learn on your own. There are resources for learning about naming conventions for just about any people group you could imagine. FamilySearch Wiki has a wealth of information, and if you type just about any group of people followed by the term naming conventions, I'd bet that the FamilySearch Wiki will be somewhere in the top 10 results. There are plenty of others, though, so there's no reason for not knowing how the people you're researching manage the naming of their children. Most of the time, the clues that you can glean from the names of your ancestors are going to be general pointers like this that nudge you towards one direction or another. Sometimes it can be a bit of indirect evidence for a specific history about your family. As an example, the earliest recorded middle name for my paternal line of Adamses is the name Sloan. It's an obvious surname, but it's not the mother's surname, and I haven't been able to track down any other nearby relative with that name. I found a few Sloans who lived in the general area of my Adamses, but it felt strange to me that they might have given their son a middle name of a family friend. It seemed like there had to be more to the story. It sat there as a curious oddity for years until my dad ended up getting a Y-DNA test through FamilyTree DNA. I was stunned to see that while the bulk of the DNA matches were men named Adams, the next largest group of men were named Sloan. Unfortunately, I suspect that whatever event resulted in this interesting situation likely occurred just on the other side of the Atlantic, so ultimately proving what happened will be quite the challenge. but I can be almost certain that my ancestors who gave their son the middle name Sloan knew that story. So the next time that you're identifying all the bits of evidence on a record, don't forget that the name of the individual you're researching is just as valid a piece of evidence as anything else. Spending time thinking about how your ancestor got their name could end up leading you to find a way around that brick wall. If you found an interesting clue in one of your ancestors' names, or if you just have an ancestor with a really unusual name, I'd love to hear about it. Reach out to me on Twitter at @TheWGTPod. I hope that you'll find something that you've heard today useful, and if you do, consider leaving a review. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next time. Next week, I want to talk about something that most genealogists try not to think about: burnout. We'll look at ways to keep moving forward with your genealogy when you feel like you've tried everything and just want to give up. The good news is that you really don't need to give up. I hope you have a great week, and I'll see you then.